You're aware of your bodies, you're aware of your posture, you're aware of your bones. Just resting into your bones for a moment. Letting your bones hold you. Breathe in deeply, breathe out deeply. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Imagine yourself turning around to look inwards. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Open your eyes. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. See a spinning wheel very fast. See it stop. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Open your eyes. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. See a balance scale swinging back and forth, like a scales of justice. See it come to the balance point. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Open your eyes. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. See the spark of darkness in the mirror womb. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Open your eyes. And then just speak your experience, spontaneously speak experience, just out into the room. Without trying to make sense of it. Could be words, phrases, sensation, anything. Just name things.
Shock and disorientation.
I liked it. Collapsing.
Yeah.
Mind stopped. Dynamic possibility. Clarity.
The colours of the picture and shapes and movement and bewilderment also.
Wider.
same thing as making the outside abstract when you suddenly open the world.
Mm-hmm.
A bit like jumping into a cold swimming pool.
Yeah, that's right. Nice, that's nice. Yeah. Sorry, Ali, you said something I didn't really.
Confusion in the beginning and the end. With something that happened in the middle that I'm not quite sure of. But it was good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, good.
Very surprising being asked to visualise quickly the unimaginable.
Yeah.
The last one was.
That's totally.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That one was the most powerful, actually.
Yeah, I've got an image, all right.
Yeah, I've got an image too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. And more insight into a black spark than I would have thought I would have got.
It does really clear the mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
That bewilderment, there's also a sense of excitement, so there's something sort of like that about it as well. It's quite a mixture. It's not just a bewildered loss kind of thing.
No, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
It's that thing you did, boom. Yeah.
Mm.
God, and then boom.
That's right. Dust. Who? Dust. Yeah. Who? Dust. Yeah.
Straight
in the circle, exactly, same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of anticipation of what's going to come next.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the image.
Yeah.
Not knowing what it is.
I don't think I've got that sense of anticipation. I don't think so. Because everything happened too quickly for me to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because usually your brain thinks ahead, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Difficult to stop the circle, very difficult. That didn't happen instantly.
No, that can't be
done,
absolutely.
Mistrustful.
Mistrust.
Silence. Yeah. Your silence.
Yeah, that method would be quite hard for you because your system moves very slowly. So it's like the antithesis. Well, it's like for you, I did the most difficult thing I could have done, right? It's completely opposite. And of course, it's important to remember that not all methods suit all people. That's the thing. So that's a method that was never going to suit you, really. You know.
The other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Yeah, because actually you need lots of time and space. So this is like the opposite of that, really. Okay, let's just... is there anything else? Because I'm about to wipe this out and put something else on the board. Anything? Any other questions about that model before we...
Yeah, can you pick up where you left off?
You were just about to say...
Yeah.
Okay, let me just come back. Yes, that's true. I'll finish off this bit. Well, actually, the bit that's left, there's not much to say about because there's not many words, really. Right, because I think where I'd got to with this was the sort of, was that transition kind of point. And in some ways, what I just did was the continuation. Right, because what I just did, really, was to do that bit. To come from that pure spontaneity thing and just do it, in a sense. Because the thing about this, so when you're trying to describe that, you can only describe it in paradoxical kind of terms. And you, even in being with it, you have to come into this kind of place of surrender and then let whatever happens happen. So it literally what happened, I actually thought I was going to take you into another chant and a meditation on the four holy living creatures. That's what I thought was going to happen. And I got present, came into the stillness, let go, and suddenly felt myself picking up this and doing that. And I was thinking, I literally didn't know what was coming next because I was thinking, oh, that's interesting. So I just followed it. So I just literally followed that. Then I put my hand down. And then I found myself doing what I did. And it's as much of a surprise to me as it is to you in that sense, right? Because I'm sort of, my job is, of course, to be responsive to that which is coming through. So I'm as much surprised by this as you are. I'm being, literally being the vessel, and moment, second by second, I don't know what's coming next. Not in tow, not it just comes, and my job is to not stop it. Really, is to sort of let it come through.
And is that the state of the very own self?
Yes, you have to place yourself in that place, right? So that's that place where you have to be just there. That's the root place. So that's the place through which then things emerge.
So it is the place of the Grail.
Yeah, ultimately it is, right? That's the source point. That's the place where things generate. That's the place that things generate out of.
How could you do that for that practice for yourself? Is there a way you could do it?
Well, I was doing it. That's how it was happening. Right? You see what I mean? So you'd have to intend. So what you would do is to, so you work with intention here. Yeah. So you would sit with the sense of intending to work with the kind of, I'll explain more about the practice or where it comes from in more detail in a bit, but you would have to, so to work with a dynamic image, you'd hold that intention, you'd sit in that place and you would breathe, and then an image would come and you'd be with the image, and then you'd come straight out again. It would happen as an act of intention. Right, so you couldn't do it in the sense of doing it to yourself.
No, I can't make up that.
And any more than I was doing, if I was trying to do that to you, then it wouldn't have worked. It came out absolutely spontaneous. Okay. So you hold the intention and then you go with it. Okay. That's what happens.
So it's the place as a therapist when you might find yourself doing something quite spontaneously, you've got no sense of what it's about.
No, that's right, exactly. And you're just in the moment embodying it, and you're being the kind of, if you like, the vehicle, the vessel through which that comes.
Part of you might be going, my God, what am I doing?
Yeah, and normally part of you is just, normally part of you is doing that, right? Because it is as much a surprise to you as anybody else. So when people are talking about shock, of course, in my experience of doing that, what I just did, part of it, me, was shocked and thinking, what am I bloody doing? So that's one of the distinguishing characteristics of that happening, is that part of you is a bit freaked out by it. Now over time you get used to it and you get less stressed by it, but it is always got slightly shocking kind of quality about itself.
So in time it becomes more like, I don't know what this is about, but I'll just trust it anyway.
Yeah.
I suppose the problem occurs when I'm just reflecting on the memories are of, you know, retreats where things were quite chaotic and, you know, nobody was really holding the space much. And people were kind of I'm reading your thing up there, give it all away, be the fool. You know, people were almost kind of letting go of all of that. But they weren't embodied enough to do the work at the time.
No, the problem with that is what happens is that this particular method depends upon the other pieces being filled in. Mm-hmm. Right? So the problem is you can do, and people do a kind of fantasy version of that. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. They create a fantasy, here's me being crazy teacher, kind of messing with your head kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that's actually a kind of shape down here of me doing something. The kind of the nature of this, when it were, it depends on you being very, so it doesn't work if you're not embodied. And it actually wouldn't work with somebody you were doing it with if they were not also embodied enough to handle it.
But you kind of, you know, I've walked out on a few retreats and, you know, very difficult to tell, you know, is it resistance that's making me get up and walk out? Or is it really that I think
that's not good.
Being held appropriately enough? It's very difficult to know that, I think, when you're wanting to also... when I'm wanting to engage in something, it's difficult to know.
Oh, I think it's tricky, you know.
Sometimes what's resistance and actually what is, but it's actually not okay. It's very hard to kind of judge that. And I'm also conscious that, you know, society, a lot of people are now engaging in quite intensive weekends of this and that. Mm, yeah. And in fact, the biggest selling product at the moment, interestingly enough, is the experience, whatever that experience might be.
Mm.
So what we know is that society is moving far quicker towards it and wanting that.
Yeah.
My concern is how embodied those processes are going to be.
No, I mean, it's very easy to produce shock in people. It's very easy to produce dissociation and experience. That's such an easy
yeah.
thing. And actually, the whole point of it, what we're looking at now is that the only reason that we can do this together is because we've all done a lot of work at these other kind of levels, so that the... well, not really, Lovely. It's because your speed is just different. That's not about not having done work. It's just a method that doesn't suit you.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas it's not like hierarchical. Like you've got to be able to do the spontaneity has to be fast, right? So it can be sometimes very, very slow. Some of the other things I've done here are very slow, you know, and it's really about having a kind of what we're working with all the time, in a way, are ways of kind of helping us work with that part of our nature that makes everything automatic and turns the icon into the idol. So there's like a battery of different methods that one can use that can help us to change a dynamic in ourselves and in other people. And some of the very fast methods, some very slow, some of it use a lot of imagery, some don't use imagery. So there's like this whole battery of things that spiritual traditions have that become part of, if you like, of the palette, really, that you're using when you're kind of working on yourself and working with others. And the problem, normally the problem is, that I think, that like one version gets chosen as this is it. Right. This is how, you know, breath meditation is the way to do it. Chanting is the way to do it. Praying to God is the way to do it. And actually, in reality, if you're going to continue to change and develop, you use a variety of different methods. But like any piece of art, not all colors are in every picture. You have the palette, if you like, the shades in a way that are yours, that are kind of typically yours. We finished with this now. Are there anything left on this before I kind of, because I want to use another model.
Penny asked about the colours. I didn't remember the answer to that. The
colours, I've used the colours to sort of separate differences, right? So the blue is like the middle thing. If you like, the green colours here represents the feeling and the emotional thing. This is more the kind of thought and shape. But in the deeper place, they reverse themselves.
That's
why the kind of, if you like, the sort of that connects to that, but it also connects to that, because it's just a way to indicate reversal. And that the fact that at that deeper place, things are really different. And they're different in the middle place as well, from the bottom. In fact, the bottom place, if you imagine. So all these transitions, these three great transitions, are very different from each other, because you've got one where you're facing outwards, blaming everybody or trying to change everything externally.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have this shift where you're looking internally, facing this confusing stuff inside yourself, trying to slow it down. And then you're in another place where you're free of that, but you're then working with keeping everything in balance. And then all of that goes, right? So each of the different, and they're not sort of developmental, like you learn to do one then another. You're moving through all of these simultaneously. And the skill, in a way, is to be with all of the different layers. And therefore, and one of the things that happens is as you become skilled at moving up and down the layers, they all become part of you, like, of the kind of creative expression of that very deep place.
Great name for a course, though.
What's that?
You could call it "This Is Not the Way."
Do all of it. That's great. Yeah. Oh God, yes, I can start to think. I can start to see it.
Yeah,
that's the dangerous thing. Okay, so I'm just going to get rid of this. Happy little girl. Oh, that's my spray. Thank you. Now, another way to describe that process, this is an image that David Spangler uses, but it's the image, which I know I've used before, but I'll come back to it. It's the image of the seashore and the sea. Mm. Right, so that's... rock pools. So you start off, so the thing about the seashore and the sea, the first place, you're on solid ground, first of all, and before you're even on the seashore. Now, on solid ground, you're just on solid. Walking around on rock, you can see it, you know, there's no movement in it. It's completely solid. What happens is you start to come into sand, start to come to the beach, so even before you get to rock pools, is that sand starts to, that rock softens. So your way of being on the ground, or standing on the ground, has to slightly alter. Now, so the very first place, you could say, if we use this image, is that, which would be equivalent to that place of people just looking out all the time and being very solid in their opinions and solid in their sense of self and self-confidence. It's like walking on rock. I know where I am. Everything is surface, everything is density, everything is a solid kind of thing. Now, what I start to do, if I start to approach the borders of that place, go towards the edges, outer edges, is things start to soften a bit. And so, you know, when we're walking on sand, we start to walk a bit differently. As we can't quite walk in the same way. You start to alter. I also start to sink into it a little bit. So rather than something having such a hard surface, it becomes a bit more permeable. As you go further into towards the sea, you're still not at the water's edge yet, but you might encounter rock pools. So you encounter that, and this is in a way, I suppose, the equivalent of reading a book that might inspire you, or listening to a piece of music, or having some contained experience that gives some glimpse into a different world. Not a world you can get into, because rock pools are too small. If you try to get into a rock pool, you kind of destroy it. But you get to a little glimpse of something that's quite different. A fluid world, a different world.
You used to say it was a synchronous world.
That's right. Synchronicities are one of the ways that you start to notice the rock pools. So that's a contained experience of two things happening together. That's a bit weird. Something spooky happening. Right? And that spookiness is kind of fascinating but scary. But that does give us a glimpse into something else. Not something we can do very much, because actually with rock pools you might play around with it, might get a little bit fascinated, but ultimately you move on from it. You know, as in synchronicity just disrupts your system. It's two things coming together that are strange, and you have that kind of spookiness that comes with that. But then normally what happens is that gets swallowed up, that experience, in the routine of life. And, you know, people can spend all their time on it. Or the one thing that can happen is people get a bit fascinated by that experience. So they can, and they can become connoisseurs of rock pools.
Workshops.
They can do...
Workshops,
exactly. To repeat the same experience rather than deepening the experience. And in a way I can kind of understand that. It's like they can have, you know, if you're not, you don't want to change yourself or your life too much, but also you want to keep peeking into something. It's a bit like, you know, so people can do that, or they, you know, and you know, people can live quite happily there. But what happens is, if you start to go a bit deeper, you start to enter that fluid element. So you start to come into the waters, into the sea, and you start little by little to get immersed in it. So in a certain sense, what you have to do is to lower your center of gravity. You have to sink in and down in order to not fall over. Now, this is the equivalent of the slowing the wheel image in the previous model, because actually what you're doing here is starting to kind of do yourself differently. You have to be, the more you walk into the water, you have to start to do things differently. You have to respond to the tides, you have to respond to the waves. You might have to take off clothes in order to do that, that's right. And in this image model, the crossover point, of course, comes when you start to get out of your depth. Because actually, where the buoyancy, where the depth of water and the buoyancy of your body means you can no longer keep yourself rooted in the way that you were. And in fact, then you have to learn to operate in a different element. You have to ground yourself in the buoyancy of your body. You have to ground yourself in fluidity in this kind of middle place. And you have to learn to swim. If you're going to get around, you have to have agency, you have to learn. And you know, this is an interesting image and analogy here, because, of course, you have to make a 90-degree turn. Your ways of locomotion on Earth and solid land don't operate here. So you have to learn different capacities, a different rhythm, a different way of doing yourself. And this is a bit equivalent to the kind of witnessing place somewhere, where you have to learn the ways of witnessing. You have to learn how to operate yourself in a different kind of way. You have to swim in a different kind of, literally have to swim as opposed to walk.
From vertical to horizontal, aren't you?
Which, yeah, that's right.
You know, when I've been trying to get people to sit in their bodies and feel what's going on without the story.
Yeah. It is, and I think what's useful about this particular model is this sort of, you know, the previous model is very good at looking at the detail of what happens in us, but this model gives a sort of overview sense to me of some of the kind of things that happen to us. So the sense of that, even as you walk into the water, it's like you have to walk differently. So, which is about, as you start to stop the wheel, you have to ground yourself more. But as you move into the kind of witnessing place, that kind of deeper place of presence, that bit no longer works. That's too mechanical. So you have to ground yourself in awareness. You have to ground yourself in fluidity. And you have to be able to operate in that more fluid kind of world.
force your way through in the way that you can.
No, you've got to cooperate with. You have to cooperate with the environment.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you use too much force, so as you know when you're swimming, it's too much force. You create backwash. You actually get in your own way. You kind of create a lot of kind of splashing where you can kind of choke yourself. So you've got to learn a different way of being, a literally more fluid way of being. And you know when you're swimming, of course, that kind of this sort of circular motion with your body, whichever way you're doing it, you have to work with rhythm. You sort of, so there's will and intention, but there's also this kind of this rhythm and cooperation with the fluid environment. So you become a more fluid kind of being. And in a way, that's there's all kinds of levels within learning how to swim, of course, because you can learn to be, you know, a dog paddler, so you can do it a little way, or you can learn to swim very fluently, and you can be an endurance swimmer. So there's all kinds of, within that kind of practice, there's different ways that you have to learn. So you can learn to get very, very fast in your swimming. So you can bring a lot of energy very, very quickly to something. You can learn to swim for a long time, which means you can sustain attention for long periods of time. And all of these are kind of the swimming metaphor, of course, is a metaphor. It helps me because it gives me, because when I'm handling my awareness, it reminds me of the various ways in which I can work with awareness. But all of it depends on that ability to be more fluid and to trust buoyancy. Trust that you have to trust that the water will hold you. And normally what happens, at least happens to me, is when I get distrusting, my body goes stiff and I start to sink. Because I sort of undercut my own buoyancy. And it's a great kind of problem of learning to swim, is you go rigid out of fear and you sink. So you prove to yourself that the water can't hold you up. Whereas once you start to relax, you naturally find the water holding you up.
Also, the water's very cold. You have to allow your body to adjust to the temperature.
Absolutely so, yeah.
And there's a moment when you pass through that initial, yeah. You've got to get out.
You relax into it, that's right, and your body aligns itself. So again, there's that process of aligning yourself with temperature, with the fluid environment, with the, you know, and I think, you know, there's a whole kind of, and then there's a whole, within that, there's a whole process of working with the waves, working with the tides. I mean, surfing is obviously a great example of that, where you actually very consciously work with the energies of the tide, ride the energies of the tide, ride the energies of the waves. But you can do that with a surf, we can do that without a surf, but it doesn't matter. But that's all, in a way, part of this kind of middle place of learning the ways of the fluid environment. And you've in a sense, you learn the ways of the solid environment. You start to learn the all you need is working with the fluid environment at the moment. Bringing it into the solid environment. That's all right. It's only water. It's no harm. No harm. Don't worry. And then there's this further stage, really, which is about the deep sea. And the deep sea again is something different. That's about the ability to descend into the depth. And in David's analogy, really, to go into depth, you either need specialized equipment or you need to be like a whale. And I kind of like the whale image for this. Because in order to be a whale and therefore descend into the depths, you have to change profoundly. So you have to shut your lungs down. Oxygen has to be contained within your muscles rather than your lungs, and you the sense that you most use there is the sense of sonar, so you use a completely different sense. And, you know, how whales, you know, what whales can do in the deep sea is very strange, really, because they have these extraordinary capacities to create sound and communication that can travel thousands of miles. So the image of the depth here for me, and the descent into the depth, and of turning, if you like, from a kind of a surface sea creature into a creature of the depth, involves a much more profound transition. And in particular, the transition involves the letting go of breath. More than letting go of breath, the shutting down of lungs. And in a way, the for as long as you're down there, you're accessing a completely different way of being.
In all senses don't work like sight.
No. So, well, sight doesn't work. So your normal senses don't work at that level. So actually what you're working with is a sonar sound. You can still make sound, and whales do make sound. It travels through the water. So you're operating in a really different kind of environment.
I understand everything you're saying and the image. I'm not sure how the image of the whale cutting off its oxygen supply and getting it from elsewhere, I'm not sure how that relates to our sense of being in the profound depths. The only experience I've had is of coming back and not quite knowing where I've been,
yeah.
Not quite knowing what happened there,
yes.
Knowing that it was a real experience,
yes.
But that I couldn't bring it back.
Yes. Exactly.
In a way that I could comprehend.
Exactly, because when you come back again, you feel like you change.
Yeah.
So actually what happens is the being you are in the depth is a different being from the being you are on the surface.
Yeah. It, just with the shutting off of the oxygen in the lungs, that you seem to be saying something quite profound about our survival system out here.
We let go of that. You let go of
system in there.
Yeah, you let go of survival. But your survival system here involves you taking the next breath.
Yeah.
Right? So in a sense you do die. There's a way of dying, you know, in that process when you go into the very deep, you die. You let go of your life.
As you do, yes, you do. There's that strong sense, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you come back from there, you come back with a sense of something having happened, not really being able to describe it or even particularly know it.
Mm.
But it later emerges in whatever way.
Yeah.
In synchronous experience, in images, in remembered thoughts. You know, but you can't have it directly because you are a different being. That's what that image gives us in a way.
It's very similar, is it to the prenatal, when you're doing the prenatal work and the training there, I found myself roaring across the room. It was like another being doing something. So it's connecting with that kind of
thing. It's that kind of thing, yeah.
Something in my body totally beside me.
Yes, that's right. It's in that territory, and what, you know, that what's coming out of that, you know. So in a sense, you descend into something, and then what emerges is something that's incomprehensible to you.
So it's a black light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of emerging in that particular form, then, you know. But and then later, you know, as you'll make sense of it later, and it becomes integrated into the layers of you, because of course, you know, the journey out of what happens is you come back from the deep. You gradually swim to shore, and what happens as you swim to shore, so in a sense you come back, if you like, to the previous state, your lungs start working again, you swim from the fluid world, from the world of the deep ocean, towards the more formed. At a certain point you start to come back to the vertical again, so you find yourself not swimming but wading. And then you gradually, if you like, emerge from the water. It's just like the first fish you emerge from the waters, and you take up the upright form, working in the world of shape and form again. So that's just another way of imaging that kind of that experience.
Interesting, they reckon the deeper that the whale goes, the more it stands upright.
That's right, that's right. Yes, exactly, because it's another reversal. That's the thing. That's right, it does it that way. So it
and goes to sleep.
Yeah.
That's right. So they hang there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hang. That's right. And they. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Beautiful footage.
Wasn't it? Yeah, the blue planet. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Can I just go back to that exercise we started?
Yeah.
It felt okay to be going into the depths.
Yep.
The shock and disorientation was the sudden return.
Yes, that's right.
So I'm struggling a bit with what was the point of the sudden return.
Okay, I'll come back to that because I want to talk about that particular method in a moment. So I'll just hold that question, John. I'm going to come back to it because there's a particular methodology with that's important.
One other thing when the whale goes deep is it feeds on something, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's fed. That's right, and I think in a way that's the point. As you descend down into the deep, you are different there. You learn about the difference. You're nourished by something, and then you re-emerge. And then, as I say, in the movement back to shore, you then repeat previous things in opposite order in order to get yourself back onto land. But you come back as a changed being.
Have you ever done this exercise using this as a visualisation, essentially as a visualisation?
No, I haven't.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that's quite powerful. We might try it later on. Actually, it's kind of good. It's quite a nice process.
Well, I did meditation, a rupa meditation at Samatha. It just happened once. But I felt I'd gone to a very still place, and I don't know if we're talking about the same place.
Yeah.
But it was not using my normal senses. They were kind of like, they were fading, and then they were fading, and then they were fading. And when I came back out, I had an enormous amount of energy. It was like
just stuck in them, yeah.
It was sort of like, it was very vertical, and it sort of like came, I just felt so energized. I just wanted to do that kind of crustacean, meditation.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Kept on doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
You know, sort of had much more energy than my body could actually support, you know.
No, well, I think that's the sort of thing going to happen, right? Because actually, when you're in that deep place, you're touching unconditioned energy as well. So you can come back with all kinds of things. So one of the things you can come back with is just a lot of energy. And in a way, there's probably quite a skillful way of working with energy, because there's, in a sense, you've come back with a bit too much energy for your body to contain.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, what you needed to do then is to work that and to discharge some of it. And so that's exactly the sort of thing that can happen.
Yeah. How would I know, how would we know, whether we have this experience in that case. I can fantasize what you're saying. Is there something I can think of that I can relate to, that I can make, oh, I see what you mean? Or am I just sort of in the deep sea, lungs closed down, etc., etc.? Yeah.
Well, I think I've seen you have that experience, because actually what happens is, but it's distinguished by absence. Sometimes when you think you've fallen asleep. And it's one of the ways you can distinguish it is it's often when you think you're falling asleep here, but you're suddenly awake, because that's not normal sleep. It's this thing I've gone banged on about for years, about sometimes you go into the state, you think you're asleep because you've lost the kind of, you know, the surface context, but suddenly you're back again. Right? So it's distinguished by a peculiar kind of absence that has presence, as words of impossible, that has presence in it as well. I think everybody has had it lots. I've just seen you have it lots of times. Okay, and sort of, and obviously there's been times you've just been sleepy as well, and that's different, but it's a very distinct experience. And it's a slightly frustrating experience, because then normally one of the things you come back with, a bit irritated that you've missed stuff and you don't know where it's gone and somewhere. It is the very deep place. That's the point with it. And
I kind of picture it like when you listen to an amazing band on stage, and for a brief moment you are listening, but you're more part of what's happening. You feel connected with all of that.
Yeah.
And you can listen to the band. So you have that kind of sense of being part of that audience, but also part of the group.
Yeah, something gets
an amazing film, and you're kind of lost in the film, but you're still watching it. But there's a part of you that's...
Well, that's more characteristic of that kind of witnessing place. That's the sort of engaged kind of witness. When this deeper place is when you don't have a sense of you watching it. You're just in it somewhere, and so it's a sort of more letting go of you. Just there. There's just no you watching. There's just something, and then you notice the difference when you come back to yourself, normally. Because you sort of come back to yourself and wow, that was that, whoa.
Yeah, if you took the music again, there can be times, I think, where you're in the music.
Yeah.
I'm not noticing I'm in the music, I'm just...
It's just the music, yes.
And then you wake up again.
Yeah. Yes, because the place where you're listening, where you're aware of it happening, is it just has a slight degree of separation. So when it really happens, and I think there's a movement, though, Bex, I think between that place of, I think those two places you've just described, being part of it and be aware of about it, are sequential movements. They're not simultaneous. So I think you move into that deep, and then you come slightly out of it and aware that you're witnessing it, and then you might even go back in again. So I think but the thing that's about that deeper layer, that's the distinguishing feature, is absence of self. Right, that's the thing. That's why absence is this distinguishing feature. I'm not there. I'm there, of course, but I'm not there.
Certainly, I've had that experience myself, and also with the cranial work. And I think when people have it and they're not expecting that, yeah, it just feels like actually we're going through all of those layers together. And I suppose the terminology that structure around we're kind of on the top first of all, and we feel all of the ripples, and then we go into the mid tide, and then there's a dropping away of self and other, and going into dynamic stillness, and it is amazing that when people kind of go down and they kind of go, ooh, I dropped off or I was asleep, but then again they're very present as well. You ask a question, they are there. And I've experienced that as well, when in a way like the shutting down, knowing that someone I worked with, when she went to that very deep place, it was almost like her body really wanted it, and something happened with her breathing that she got very scared, stopped breathing. So it's interesting you say, in a way, you need to let go and your lungs start doing something different. So I kind of felt, oh, actually, yes, that's the...
And that literally happens. Your breath almost vanishes when you go into that very deep stillness. It's almost like you stop breathing. I mean, it literally happened to the whale, but it happens almost to us, because you can lose awareness of breath entirely, because it gets into very subtle places. And of course, then if you get scared by that, which is what's happening to your client, she then just jumps out of that in that sense, because of the fear.
There was a way of getting to this state. We've used various ways. You never use trumming.
Never use trying.
Drumming, do you?
Drumming, no.
It seems to be very popular. I'm really glad that you don't. Because I don't like drumming.
Oh, no, I've used drumming in the past, but we did drumming, but if you remember, I stopped doing it for ages, because I sort of... I tell you why I stopped doing it. Not because it's not effective, it's quite effective, but I found it a bit too violent. And it's, for me, it's just a personal choice, which is why I use the bell. So if I'm wanting that kind of rhythmic kind of sound, I use the bell, these days. So I haven't brought my drum along for a long time, I don't think. It's something I can occasionally, because I kind of like drumming, so occasionally I will do it for the fun of it. But... I suppose I don't really use it much anymore.
If it's not well done, it can seem to bruise the brain a bit.
Well, I think it can, and I thought it actually was the other reason I don't do it, because it's a bit knackering, to be honest.
Yeah.
And so I'm using gentler methods these days. But the thing with drumming, and it's the same with chanting, it's the same with using the bell or even the silver branch. The is what you're doing is asking everybody to pay attention to a repetitive stimulus that disrupts the dynamic of the internal dialogue effectively. So, you know, and it's quite a good outer myth. I suppose why I was just thinking, well, why don't I do this anymore? Well, partly because I've got interested in subtler methods of doing it, I think.
And chanting, one's actually engaged in doing it for oneself.
I think that's right. I think that's probably the other reason why I do it, actually, because I find chanting better if we're going to use that method. And because you're not dependent on somebody drumming for you. Mm. I think it's a very effective method. I'm not dissing drumming, right? It's very powerful for people and kind of, and it's just that I myself have stopped doing it, I think, and therefore found other ways, I suppose.
I use the bowl in my work like you do, and I find the bowl, I can change the tempo of the bowl.
Oh, easy.
At will, because yeah. There's an element of chaos that comes with doing running the bowl around, isn't there? So there's a chaos and continuity at the same time.
Yeah. No, I've got...
It can change quite profoundly.
No, I think that's right. I think if just for me, I've used the bowl replaced the drum, really. I used to, you know, those of you worked me a long time, I used to bring a drum along all the time and use the drum, but it's been years now since I've done that, I think. Mainly because I think the bowl for me has just replaced it. And it takes me on to an interesting subject, but do you need a break before I go on? You want a break yet? Or no? Yeah, no?
People don't mind me moving around. That's all I need to do is just move.
Yeah. Okay.
The bowl is very sympathetic, isn't it?
Yeah.
The bowl is very sympathetic to the ears, and the drumming is quite, blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's demanding.
Yeah, it is.
So the drum branch as well sometimes is very different too.
Yeah, it is.
That can be,
yeah, it is. So I suppose it's just an interesting question, this, really, because I hadn't really thought about it till it was said. I suppose what I think is that some of these methods are quite subtle now, and actually, because mainly I'm working with people who've done a lot of work on themselves. Drumming would be much more effective with a group of people who've never done anything, never done any work at all. The bowl wouldn't be as effective because the drumming demands the attention. So if people are sitting there with a dialogue that's very strong and very outer directed, well, it's you can ignore a bowl. It's hard to ignore a drum. So I think it brings us on to this kind of interesting question of different methods really apply to different. This is why there's no one standard method or one standard method. Just do this, right? You, it's a creative process where you're applying yourself to circumstances, and of course things change over time. A lot of the things I used to do, I don't really do now. Interestingly, I don't really even use the silver branch much anymore. You know, it's sort of, I'd mostly just use my bowl.
There's an interesting thing of tools in this sort of work, you know. Sort of think some things, you try different things, and it's as if you're sort of bolting them on.
Yeah.
And then some things get built into the structure, don't they? And I think you try a variety of methods to, and then just sort of see what sticks and what becomes most appropriate and most helpful. It's only criteria, isn't it? What helps you best?
Yeah. I know. We need to just do something. I'd rather just sit you talking to me. Just pause for a moment. I'll just stop there.